WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Oh, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk. My name is Kevin Tachi, and I will be your guide. I will be your host for the next 1 hour and 45 minutes. What do we do here? We talk. Usually the conversation will focus on local items. We'll try to book and schedule local state reps, state senators, local officials, folks who are experts in certain areas, in certain fields, just so that we can better inform you, the folks here in the South Shore, whether it's something that is happening in your own backyard or something that may be happening in a neighboring community, or even if it's, you know, on the, a global proportion, like a pandemic. We did that over the past year and a half, well, less than a year and a half, where we had a variety, an assortment of experts who we would talk about the pandemic, and they would do so only in the way that they know how. So our lineup this evening, we actually start things off again. We kind of switch back to the county thing. I know the, usually it's the State House report. Well, we got more of a county conversation going on. We're going to be speaking with Plymouth County Sheriff Joe McDonald and Plymouth County District Attorney Tim Cruz. And we're going to talk a little bit about their triad program. We're going to talk about their work to better educate and better inform our older population. We know that there are so many unsavory people out there who are looking to take advantage of an older person's kindness, or maybe not their knowledge of what's going on with some of the latest things. We'll talk a little bit about the triad program with both D.A. Cruz and Sheriff McDonald. They actually have a couple of upcoming events at the county farm next week. We'll talk a little bit about that. Joining us following the sheriff and the D.A., we will speak with Tom Driscoll. Tom is a candidate for the Pembroke Select Board. And we'll tap into Tom to see what's going on, because prior to the elections, the town elections in Pembroke on Saturday the 26th, you have annual town meeting. And who doesn't love a good annual town meeting that has issues and something to talk about? We'll talk a little bit, I'm sure, about the community center and items like that with Tom. Hour number two, speaking of elections, recently, I would say a week ago, we actually had a recount in the town of Whitman. Not just for one race, but for two, because those races were oh so close. So Board of Selectmen, a gentleman who has been on the radio program before and who was the subject of a recount, his opponent wanted to have the race recounted for Selectmen. Dan Salvucci joins us, as well as Fred Small, who is a Whitman-Hanson Regional School Committee member who also had a recount. Both gentlemen won their respective races by a mere 6 votes. And I'm saying the selectmen's race, 6 votes, the school committee race, 6 votes. We'll find out what happened. And also, there's also another opening. And then we'll wrap things up with Newby Rateau, a good friend and conversationalist. He will chat with us. We'll talk a little bit about the Boston Celtics, the news that it's going to be changes not only in the front office, but on the bench. Right now, though, time for us to step aside and find out what's happening one final time out on the roadways, being brought to you by Brennan Smoke Shop, online at BrennanSmokeShop.com, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, and coming to you soon in Hudson, New Hampshire.
Well, thanks, Kevin. 93 South is sluggish from Route 28 to Route 24. Then you're heavy passing a crash on the shoulder on the exit ramp to Route 24 South. Northbound is tied up from 95 to Route 24. Route 24 South, you're on the brakes from 93 to the Horse Bridge and again passing Route 139. The expressway southbound's jammed from the tunnel down to the on-ramp from Freeport Street. Get a little bit of running room, but then you're slow from Neponset Circle to the split. Northbound's crawling from the Braintree split to Freeport Street. And Route 3 South delays from the expressway to Union Street and from Route 53 to Route 139. This report is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Celebrate summer at Whole Foods Market. Get 3 16-ounce organic strawberries for $10 through June 15th, plus an extra 10% off for Prime members while supplies last. Learn more on the Whole Foods Market app. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
The 10th annual on the 11th year Goma's Mini Bike Massacre featuring Inverter. Saturday, June 26th, the pandemic came. We are the survivors. This year's theme is the undead.
Riders must dress the theme. Mini bikes and go-karts, 212cc or smaller, pull starts only. Waivers must be signed by all participants by 10 a.m. Rider registration is $30, spectators $20.
Goma's Mini Bike Massacre, the undead. 45 North Carver Road, Wareham, June 26th.
Join Goma's Mini Bike Massacre on Old School Facebook. Brought to you in part by Brennan Smoke Shop. Brennan Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and soon New Hampshire. Brennan Smoke Shop, customers must be 21 years of age or older and proper ID is required.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We are privileged to be joined by not only the Plymouth County District Attorney, but the Plymouth County Sheriff, both Tim Cruz and John McDonald. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me and chatting a little bit about an upcoming event or events that have something to do with TRIAD. I believe it's an acronym. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm cheating because I'm reading off a piece of paper here. The right information and direction. Is that correct?
You hit the nail on the head, Kevin. That's perfect.
I guess I would start. I'll start with you, District Attorney Cruz. Talk to me about the work that the county is doing, not only your office, but also the sheriff's office, when it comes to safety of our older population.
Yeah, well, thanks, Kevin. It's great to be here with the sheriff today. Regarding lots of things that maybe you don't know, and people watching may not know what we do, a lot of the preventative aspects of both of our positions and both of our jobs. And we both understand the importance of trying to prevent things before they happen. It's much easier to prevent something than, as they say, put the toothpaste back in the tube. It's always a challenge to get that done. So we do many things with many different groups of people, whether they be children or they do or seniors. And dealing with TRIAD, which as you've already set forth, TRIAD is a nationally recognized program in which public safety, older adults, and community groups all work together to unify and implement the services that are currently available to older adults in the community. So we have partnerships here in Plymouth County through various Council on Aging. That's usually the way that these are formed. And currently right now in Plymouth County, we have 11 different TRIAD groups. We've had some that unfortunately have over the years have come and gone contingent upon individuals that maybe have moved on and are no longer running those ones. But it's my understanding that we're going to be having more groups join us. And I think that's a really good thing, because it consists of It's not run by the DA. It's not run by the sheriff. It's everybody working together. So we're working with the police chiefs, the fire chiefs, the Council on Aging director, the seniors that have chosen to lead their triad, and the community organizations. So we provide guidance, we provide support, and we will try to help them and keep them apprised of what's going on. And even during these COVID times, I know that the sheriff and myself have been doing senior safety Zoom meetings throughout our county, talking about issues that are going on with COVID scams, or whether they be the ongoing grandparent scams, and trying to keep everybody apprised of what's going on in our community as best we can when we're not able to show up physically like we enjoy doing, but we weren't able to because of COVID. So now that I'm glad that the curtain's going down on COVID to some extent, and that we're going to be able to physically meet and say hi to people again.
So I would ask, what are some of the programs and resources, Sheriff, that are available through Triad or that are associated with Triad?
Well, you know, Kevin, we are constantly talking about a lot of the stuff that we do, the Code Red program that we do, that is like people would know is in a reverse 911. We get people all the information on that. We've got the Safety Assurance Program, which many people, you don't recognize that name, but probably remember the old name, which was the Are You OK program. That's a program where we have automated phone systems here in the Communications Center at the Sheriff's Department that make those calls, well-being calls, at a designated time that a person can choose, and basically ensures their safety and peace of mind, not only for them, but a lot of times for their relatives. So we're always looking at those and new programs that we're coming out with. District Attorney Cruz and I are always looking or on the lookout for interesting speakers that can come and talk about different scams that are going on or ways to protect ourselves. And there's a lot to talk about. And I think I'll echo what Tim had said, that I am so glad to see that this chapter of our history is coming to a close. Thankfully, you know, that we're going to start seeing people again. I think that's, you know, while these Zoom meetings have been great and they will serve a purpose going forward, it's, to me, the most important thing is that personal contact, where we actually get to talk to people face to face, to see them, to shake their hands. I'm looking forward to that. So I can tell you, I am very excited to welcome people over to the farm.
I think what you brought up about the pandemic, I would ask you, Tim, during the pandemic, did we see a heightened number of issues with our older population and being the older population being preyed upon during this tough time?
Yeah, unfortunately, Kevin, the bad guys that are out there, the people that will meet you via the internet, text messages, emails, whatever it may be, they are working double time during times of crisis. And what they do is they will morph their more recent scams into what's applicable. So therefore, a lot of the scams that we would be seeing would be COVID-19 scams, contact tracing scams, always trying to hit people up, whether it be face-to-face. People are actually going door-to-door, if you believe it or not, talking to individuals at their homes, giving them a test, quote-unquote, giving them a false positive, and then getting their information from Medicare and actually submitting bills. And that was going on not just here in Plymouth County, it was going on everywhere, here in the Commonwealth and also here in the United States. And we always continue to get the versions of the grandparents scams that have been going on, and we've been dealing with that issue for a long time. And there was kind of a unique nuance to that this time, in that the story that one of the people that were unfortunately taken by this individual, by these bad guys, the story was that their grandson was driving with a buddy of theirs up in New Hampshire, was in a car accident, and some people got hurt, and as a result of that, he was being charged with a crime. And because of COVID, the courts were only opened up one day a week. So if he didn't come up with $8,000 cash, he was going to be held for a week in jail. And that expedited his grandmother to going to the bank, asking for $8,000 cash, getting it out there. And believe it or not, a courier actually showed up at her home, and she hand delivered the $8,000. And of course, and unfortunately, you know, the money was gone. In this instance, however, and this is an aberration, unfortunately, we actually were able to trace that money and trace the individuals. We actually have pending criminal cases against the individuals involved in that. But like we continue to tell all of our seniors and everybody, You know, don't be embarrassed if this happens to you. These people are professionals. We need to know about this. It needs to be reported. We need to make sure that we can get the word out what the latest scam is, because they're always changing. They're always evolving. And I think that it's incumbent upon us to, once again, remind people. And we try to do that, I think, through Triad also, whether they be our senior luncheons or our picnics or the things that we do. We're always talking about these things to reinforce that you always got to keep your guard up and always protect your information.
It's worth noting, you talk about some of the events that you hold. I believe we have a couple coming up next week. Is that correct, Sheriff?
That is indeed correct. Yeah, we've got, we're going to have people coming over to the farm, which is something that we are extremely proud of. I don't know if you've been there recently, Kevin, but we're open for public sales, and we're going to have... on the 21st from 11 to 1, folks are going to be able to come down and, you know, from these triad groups that we're, as Tim said, reinvigorating, rejuvenating, and hopefully remaking and making some new ones. They're going to come down. They'll get to see Timmy and I, and we'll talk. We'll answer any questions that they have. As Tim points out, you know, whenever you get a major event, even of a local nature, not necessarily national or international, those events oftentimes will breed new variations of old scams, and almost invariably will bring new scams, you know, totally new. So it's always good for us to keep up on those. We're going to have, again, you know, this is a two-day event. Normally it's a it would be a one-day event for us to get together with those triad groups. But we're going to do that on the 21st of June, 11 to 1. And then for those folks that aren't necessarily comfortable getting out of the car and having, you know, very close personal contact, on the following day, on June 22nd, we are going to have an option where Tim and I will again both be there. And people will be able to pull up in their cars. They'll get their grab-and-go lunch, as we're calling it. And they'll be able to say hello to us, which is a nice thing. And if they've got questions... you know, we'll be able to answer those questions for them there. And we're going to have some nice packets of information on some of these scams and some of the things that, you know, have been going on while we haven't been able to meet. So it should be a great time. So again, you know, that's June 21st and 22nd. On the 21st, 11 to 1 at the farm, we'll be getting out and having contact. And then on the 22nd, the following day, people are going to be able to come down, same type of a format, but they'll be able to stay in their cars, and it's sort of like a drive-through.
And again, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Plymouth County Sheriff John McDonald, who he just finished up talking, and District Attorney Tim Cruz, and we're talking about the Triad event going on down at the Plymouth County Farm. Down, I believe it's down at Plymouth on Oberry Street. Is that correct?
On Oberry Street. Yep.
Yep. Yep. And these an important event like this. I don't know if you want to follow up, but DA Tim Cruz, with anything in regards to these two events, or looking forward to at least offering a flexibility. You know, the 21st, you're able to kind of have an in-person meet and greet, and then the grab and go. At least you have a flexibility to still, anybody has concerns, you can address them then.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, COVID has been such an unusual pandemic. Not that we have a lot of pandemics, fortunately, but you know, we're things that are changing people's lives. And I think that, you know, during COVID, there was a lot of isolation. People may have been felt that they were alone, even with their computers. I mean, doing Zoom things is not the same thing as talking to people face to face. It just isn't. So that's why I'm really glad that we're able to start opening the doors up. And I'm also really glad that we can go down, you know, as the sheriff said, you know, down to his place, where we normally do a summer picnic every year, you know, and it allows the seniors to go there. They can go around. He has a petting zoo. He's got greenhouse. He's got all sorts of stuff down there. They do a tremendous job. And I think everybody likes to go down there and enjoys themselves getting out. So I would certainly suggest that if you do feel comfortable, please get in touch with your COA and your triad. And if you don't have a triad, please just come on down, because, you know, we're always trying to get people there and let people understand that, you know, there are individuals out there who are trying to work together to try to get us through these difficult and challenging times, and that we're going to be in a position that we continue to do our jobs. And I think a lot of a portion of our job nowadays is to help people and prevent things before they occur. Knowledge does that. knowledge and information is very important. And that's why I think the bags that we will also hand out with that information, you can look at all that stuff, the file of life that we normally put out, the credit card reporting agencies that you can use to run, you know, for free. You can check your own credit card scores to make sure somebody hasn't, found your old credit card application and filed out an application for a credit card with your name that you don't know about. We continue to say as we go, and we always talk to seniors, make sure that when you do get that stuff in the mail, and we all get it, we get it every day, make sure you shred those things. Don't just toss them out, because people really are, believe it or not, still dumpster diving and going in and getting the mail that's tossed. So there's many different things that I think it's important to reinforce to our seniors and to everybody, and to let them know that, you know, there are people out there that care. There are people in these positions that want you to keep you out of trouble and keep you safe and out of harm's way. And that if there's anything that we can do, please feel free to reach out to us. You can reach out to me at my website, PlymouthDA.com. I don't know the sheriff's website. I'm sure Joe will be able to tell you that. But PlymouthDA.com, we have lots of information. And please feel free to go on there and call us.
Sheriff, do you want to follow up with your website?
Sure. Yeah, thanks. I also just want to note that any of the seniors that are already planning on coming, they should contact their Council on Aging directors, and they can let them know what it is they want for lunch so that we can have what they want. It's a small detail, but an important one. As far as our website goes, there's a lot of great resources there as well. That's www.pcsdma.org. And it's a lot to remember, but the easy way to do it, it's the initials, Plymouth County Sheriff's Department, MA.org.
And it's easy enough just for the folks who are tuned in. When you go on the website, the homepage, there are drop downs, and one of the drop downs that you will find will be Triad. And I believe that will lead individuals, if you're not sure if, in fact, your community is part of the Triad program, would there not be a list of communities that not only say when they meet and who the elder affairs director might be?
Yeah, it should be on that site. Right now, like we said earlier, we have 11 triads in Plymouth County. Those are located in Bridgewater, Brockton, Plimpton/Carver, East Bridgewater, Halifax, Hanover, Hingham, Lakeville, Marshfield, Plymouth, and West Bridgewater. So if you go on the site, it should be able to direct you to where you will find that information as to who the COA director is, and also the times and the meetings that they have for Triad and the other fun things that they end up doing to keep people busy and keep them out and about in our community.
And are there times that either both of you or one of you may attend some of these meetings depending on your schedules?
We certainly will either be at some of the Triad meetings, or we will have our staff there. And those are the people that you can provide questions to if you have them. But we always enjoy going to them when we can. Our annual Christmas one that they have, where they have ham and bean supper, and it's always really good. And like I said, it reminds me of what my mother used to make. So I always enjoy going to that. And the sheriff's always there too.
Yeah, it's a rare occasion, Kevin, that Tim and I miss these. Because in the course of our day, this is probably one of the more enjoyable things that we get to do. So it's unusual for us to miss.
Gentlemen, anything that we've overlooked talking about during this segment, but we want to make sure we touch upon as we wrap up?
Well, I mean, I think that to me is what we've been doing for Triad, but what people should know. And like I said, you should go to either of our websites to get a fuller understanding of what we do. Because many times we're always asked, you know, what does the DA do? What does the sheriff do? And my response is always the same. It's always, well, have you ever watched Law & Order? Or have you ever watched CSI? And people will chuckle, and then I'll always say, well, that's nothing like that. That's television. That's not what we do. But, you know, at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is do our individual jobs, but at the same time do more than that. And to work in the community and be part of the community so that we can help everybody that we can so that you don't need to see either the sheriff or you don't need to see me. We're involved in lots of serious things, and that's why we're there. That is our job. But nowadays, I believe that our roles and responsibilities have expanded more. And I think we've been able to expand those roles in a preventative and proactive fashion to keep people out of the system before they come in. And that's why group meetings through Triad or whatever the local meeting place may be or meeting may be, I think that's really important. And I appreciate the opportunity to get the word out as to just some small details as to what we do. But there's a lot more that we do. And if anybody has any questions, always feel free to call us or go into our website and get that information.
Yeah, so true, Tim. Well put. You know, our job descriptions, you know, people know traditionally basically what it is that we do. But as Tim correctly notes, they've expanded in a very positive way. Any given day is going to bring us some difficult circumstances. But for the most part, I also I'm happy to say that we get a lot of these great meetings that we're able to do. And, you know, while you can't quantify how many crimes we prevent or how many victims we save from victimization, I know that it's a big number, and I'm very glad to do it. And I'm glad that I get to do it with my colleague and friend, D.A. Cruz.
And I feel it's a privilege to be able to, as local media, spread the word of what you are doing beyond, you know, incarcerating or, you know, overseeing folks who are incarcerated or catching the bad guys. And it goes a lot deeper than that for each of your individual departments and organizations. And then I like spreading that word. So I appreciate your time, both of you.
Thank you.
And we've been joined by District Attorney Tim Cruz and Plymouth County Sheriff John McDonald. Sheriff, just a side note before I sign off here. You and I are almost at that point of doing our annual history lesson, which I know you love doing when it comes to Independence Day. So I look forward to seeing you and talking with you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I look forward to that too, Kevin. Thank you.
You got it. Sheriff, thank you for joining us. District Attorney Tim Cruz, thank you as well.
Thank you.
You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. We will step aside just for a moment, but fear not, we will return in just a couple of moments.
If you want a drink, that's your business. If you want to stop, that's for Alcoholics Anonymous.
AA is an inclusive fellowship of individuals all around the world. The one thing you need to ask yourself is, am I ready to do something about my drinking problem? For more information, literature, and videos about Alcoholics Anonymous, and to find a meeting near you, call 617-426-9444 or visit AA.org.
Jay Farner here, CEO of Rocket Mortgage and Rocket Companies. Last year, we saw historically low mortgage interest rates. What you may not know is that interest rates are already starting to increase, and it's likely that trend is only going to continue. Our team of experts is standing by to help you save before rates go up. Don't look back and wish that you had taken action. Call 833-8-ROCKET or visit rocketmortgage.com.
Rocket. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states and MLSconsumeraccess.org number 3030.
Sheila, we need to set up Johnson's quarterly review.
Janowski Investments keeps portfolios profitable, but a double client base calls for double the advisors.
Hello. Hi, Janet. I'm so sorry. Pulling up your portfolio right now. Give me a sec.
Indeed can help them hire the people they need.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. When you sponsor a job, you immediately get your short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we return for yet another segment here. First hour of Monday Night Talk. Joining us from the great town of Pembroke, as you may or may not know, they got a couple of upcoming events. I believe a week from tomorrow will be the annual town meeting. Who doesn't love annual town meeting? Those who are political junkies, they live for it. And then just a few days later, Saturday the 26th, is the annual town election. And joining us is a gentleman who is a candidate for Pembroke Select Board, with Mr. Tom Driscoll joining us. Tom, Great to be talking to you, not just as a candidate with a bunch of other candidates, but one-on-one.
Thank you for having me, Kev. I really appreciate it. Exciting times in Pembroke.
Yeah, you know, and the big thing is, the big debate is about the override. Do you feel that's going to be the biggest topic next Tuesday night?
I would assume that it's going to be the biggest topic. It's the override slash debt exclusion heard around the world in Pembroke. I think it's going to be a pretty lively meeting.
The top billing is because the community wants a new community center.
Well, the community center task force would like a community center. The people of Pembroke, well, that's for us to decide at town meeting. Right. But there's a certain, that committee felt it was in the best interest of Pembroke during a pandemic to have a debt exclusion slash override.
Tom, I would ask you, like, how long has this been going on that there has been a discussion, several discussions, about building a new community center?
Many years, many chapters have been written. There were three committees altogether to get the community center going. It's something we need. Like, we absolutely need it. And I am for a community center, just not this year. Coming out of a pandemic, it's just not the right time to raise somebody's taxes. People are on fixed income. Some people live in paycheck to paycheck. And I just can't imagine it's in the best interest of Pembroke to raise somebody's taxes at this time. I mean, I was a little surprised when they came forward with it, but, you know, they got to let them be heard, right? See how it works out for them.
One of the things that I recall from the political forum that WATD had was that there was a discussion, now that you have a new police chief, new fire chief, that maybe your prior department heads were not in favor of a public safety campus, where maybe the newer department heads or interim department heads might be willing to talk about having a joint police station, fire station. Was that not a part of a conversation?
That was part of a conversation. And they are, I've talked to both of them. Both obviously want a facility for police and fire. And I believe that they were looking, let's go back to the beginning. I think it was 2016. We bought a section of land, 1453, at the corner, to build a police station or fire station. At the time, the police and fire did not want to be together. Times change. New people come on. They want to be together. It's a miracle. I know they've been looking at how they can fit a public safety building in there. And I don't want to speak for them. I know that they want one. They're very much like one. The Pembroke Police Department, the police station, is somewhat of a liability to us. It's old. You can't separate adults and juveniles. And that's going to cause us, it's a liability. It's going to get us sued. Everybody knows the police station is very, not run down, but it's old and it's antiquated. And we need a modern facility. And to the point where it is, needed. The fire station's no different. I mean, it's not as bad. It's probably not going to get sued, but where you have firefighters walking through bunk areas to wash themselves off, to decontaminate, it's they're old, you know, they're antiquated, and we need one, quite frankly. And you would think that would be what they're going after, should be going after, over a community center. It's a want, not a need.
So do you feel that there's a, depending on what happens next Tuesday, depending on how the vote comes out, do you feel that a public safety campus could enter the conversation and somehow change everybody's thought on whether to approve? Because no, yes, what
I think that folks need to know that it's going to happen within. They have a committee now for it. I don't. I know Selectman Tribute goes on it, and I know a couple other people or folks on it, but quite, or it might be just the chief and the fire chief, which it probably should be, you know, and a selectman, yeah, or, you know, town manager, whatever. But it's progressed enough where it's going to have an override eventually, whether it's 1 or 2 years. My thought is do what the town manager suggested that was kind of overlooked or not looked at,
right,
would be to bundle the overrides, put the public safety building and the community center together and do it as one override. There's been two or three towns that have done it. I think it was Scituate, and there was another one. I can't think of which one it was, but it's to me, that's a no brainer rather than going for it now coming out of a pandemic.
Well, let's definitely see what ends up happening on Tuesday night. Again, we are speaking with Tom Driscoll. He is a candidate for the Pembroke Select Board. While we have a few minutes left here to chat with you, what do you feel? Do you feel that the community center is the key issue in the race, or do you feel that there are other issues that need to be talked about and that you want to at least bring to the forefront while we're chatting?
I don't know. A lot of the topic, you know, some of the hot topics were last year were the racial, the letter they wrote denouncing racism. I agree with the letter. I agree with everything they wrote or whatever, everything that was typed. I felt it was wrong it should have been unanimous, in my opinion. It wasn't, I don't think it was too much to ask. Like, I don't think it was, I think it was like taking a step forward, you know, like Pembroke, hey, you know what? We're getting with the times. We're moving forward. And two of them, but one voted against it and one abstained. And it just was, I didn't get it. I didn't understand. And, you know, it was one of the things that like made me like really think about getting like running for selectman. Cause I was like, these guys are leaders in the community. And the letter just was a no brainer, and they vote and they did what they did. They cast what they either abstained or didn't vote. And, you know, during the debate that we had, I think you saw John Brown saying that, you know, he had people give him a hard time about it, and they should. You know, he's a leader in the community. I'm not trying to call anybody out. Like, it's nothing like that. It's just, it's like, come, I don't know. I just think that it was wrong. You know, you should have had all of them voting for it or getting behind it. You know.
So you know, there's two incumbents who are up.
Yep.
What do you feel? What do you bring? What kind of breath of fresh air do you bring as a candidate, as a potential select board member that you want to bring to that particular board that it's lacking right now?
Getting stuff done. Actually following through with projects. Actually finishing something that that other board started, or modifying it to a way you make it want to work for the town now. I've sat in meetings during the pandemic with both those gentlemen. Leadership. I think I could bring better leadership than what we have. You know, it's just how, you know, after what I witnessed last year with the pandemic, how leaders either step up or don't, it just, I don't know, it changed my, it made me want to run, and here we are.
Now, Tom, is this your first run for office, or have you served on other committees before?
So when I said I sat in other meetings, I've been on the Pembroke Board of Health for 10 years, sixth as chair. I was on the recreation committee for commission for 4 years, committee for 4 years. I was on the solid waste recycling committee for 3 years, two as VP or vice chair. And I was 1 year on ZBA. 15 years total. Actually, it might be less than 15 years on adding up all the boards, but I've been in Pembroke for 15 years.
So it'd be easy to say that you, A, you're running for the select board. You're not a new candidate by any means. You are somebody who has municipal experience, who wants to exude leadership, and you feel that there's a void. Is that accurate?
I'd say that's accurate, an accurate statement. And, you know, we switched government a couple of years ago, or how our town was run. We switched to a town manager.
Yeah, town administrator, right?
Yeah, instead of a town administrator. And it was a big step for Pembroke. It took a long time. I wouldn't say a real long time, but it took a while. And because that was, like, I think the first sign for people that Pembroke's growing as a community. And, you know, we hired Mr. Chenard for a reason, to manage the town. And I think that the select board hasn't always backed him up since he's been hired. Or I just think that he needs a strong select board behind him.
So one of my final questions as we're coming into the close of our segment, you've mentioned that this board or previous boards, one of the things that they seem to struggle with, and if I'm wrong, please correct me, is completing tasks, getting things over the finish line. There's no problem starting things. Is there something that you already are eyeballing that you hope that if you're a member of the select board, that you as a team can accomplish?
So let me stop you right there. I don't believe, because Arthur Boyle, who had served a long time as a selectman, is my father-in-law. And, you know, as Arthur explained to me, it wasn't for the lack of trying to get stuff done. But other things happen. Overrides happen. Schools need money. Things need to get done. Roofs need to be mended. You know, so overrides happen. I don't want to look like... I'm not, definitely not casting blame on the old, on the former selectmen. I think they did an outstanding job with what they had. I apologize. Continue the question.
No. But I want to make sure that I understand. What would you like to accomplish if you are elected? What would you like to accomplish as a member of that group?
The number one priority, if I get elected, is to push for the public safety building, to get the public safety building built. It needs to be done. We shouldn't be talking about a community center. We should be talking about a public safety building. But they want to talk about a community center. That's fine. We're still going to have to talk about a public safety building in a year, maybe two. But it's coming. Why not put them together? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Is there going to be an effort that you know of? Let me finish. Do you know that there may be a conversation that might be brewing to actually have the two projects put together, or to wait for the community center and maybe package them?
I know that the town manager, the one that we hired to lead, made the suggestion to bundle the projects, and it was brushed aside. It was never followed through. And if I'm not mistaken, we hired him to manage the town, give us the best advice available. Yep. And we didn't take. So here we are.
We've been talking with Tom Driscoll. He is a candidate for Pembroke Select Board. And we've talked about a couple of different things, not only next Tuesday's annual town meeting, but we also talked about his candidacy to be a member of the Select Board. We're wrapping things up. If anything you want to tell folks in regards to either get in touch with you or finding out more about your campaign, how can they do that?
Well, you can go to Thomas Driscoll for Select Board on Facebook, or you can reach me at thomasdriscoll70@gmail.com. I'll answer any questions you have. My numbers, I think, post, it's out there. You can find my number. It's definitely on the on my Facebook page. But reach out to me. If you have a question, I'll gladly answer.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
Kevin, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
He is Tom Driscoll. He is asking for your vote to come June 26th, Saturday, June 26th, if you're not sure as to your voting status or how to vote, where to vote. I would strongly suggest talking to the town clerk. But, hey, that concludes the first hour of Monday Night Talk. We're going to step aside just for a moment, I swear. When we come back, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
What is AA? Alcoholics Anonymous is an international fellowship of men and women who've had a drinking problem.
It is non-professional and self-supporting.
AA is multiracial, apolitical, and available almost everywhere.
There are no age or education requirements. Membership is open to anyone who wants to do something about their drinking problem.
Call 617-426-9444 or find online meetings at aa-intergroup.org.
Tiny of Tiny Sons Glass. If you're driving along right now and you've got an angry little ding in your windshield.
Ouch!
But good news, we can fix that ding. We'll fix that ding before it spreads. Drive on over to Tiny and Sons, Route 53 Pembroke. We will fix that ding. Your insurance company will pay.
And that's why I sing the gimme that ding.
So give me that ding. Tiny and Sons Glass will fix that ding. Insurance company will pay.
That's right.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call. Give me that ding.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tocci and Monday Night Talk.
We return for the second hour of Monday Night Talk here on 959WATD. Joining me for this segment is Whitman Selectman, reelected Dan Salvucci. And Whitman Hanson Regional School Committee member, reelected for the town of Whitman, Fred Small. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
So, for folks who aren't aware, maybe politically, just a week ago, there was actually a recount for these individuals' seats. Now, they had town election in May. And it was a very, very close vote for the selectman's race in Whitman, which, if I'm correct, was a difference of 6 votes between Mr. Salvucci and the opposition. And Mr. Small had a close vote, I believe, 6 votes as well, with he and his opposition. Gentlemen, when you election day, you know, you're thinking to yourselves, you know, either I'm going to do really well, I'm going to either do really well or maybe not so well. But did you ever envision that you were going to have such a close vote? We'll start with you, Dan.
No, actually, I thought I was going to do very well, where I've been a selectman for many, many years, and people know exactly what I'm all about and how I feel and what I contribute to the town. But I guess I was wrong. I guess that my opponent had, I assume, the younger vote, maybe, and they were looking for something different. And I was quite surprised when it was that close.
Same with you, Fred. Did you think that it was going to be, you know, a great success, or that you were going to be like, well, you know, at least I was able to hold office for, you know, oh so many years?
Well, I was a little bit surprised in the result. I went in anticipating anything can happen. When you have four candidates for two seats, everything can get, the votes get diluted, you know, quite a bit. Mr. Scriven, who topped the ticket, is very, very popular in town, has a good base of support, you know, as was evident in the final vote. You know, so I always felt that he was very safe. Myself, I wasn't sure. It was a matter of, you know, everyone telling me, oh, you've got it, don't worry about it. Then it was close. Then the phone started ringing and people saying, wow, that was real close. You know, if there's another election, I'll make sure I get out this time and vote for you.
What does that say about the town demographics? Do you feel that the demographics of the town have changed over the past few years, Fred?
No, and I think it's perhaps, and I'm going to say indicative of Dan's race as well. A lot of people on a beautiful, gorgeous Saturday in May, it wasn't their priority to go out and vote. And, you know, my competitor did a good job of getting out their base. You know, they got people out to the polls. You know, we, you know, perhaps have to look at that. And if there's another election in the future, you know that we have to get our people out. I counted, you know, 50, 60 votes or voters, you know, that, you know, Fred, we feel bad. You know, we wanted to be there for you, but we just didn't make it. You know, and that includes someone that had a couple of signs on their lawn for me. You know, oh, geez, I didn't realize. You know, just slipped my mind. So to make the voters more aware of when it's happening and to please ask them to do, you know, their civic duties and spend the few minutes and go and vote.
Do you want to share your thoughts on that same sentiment, Dan?
Yeah, I ran into the same issue because the next day when I was collecting my signs, people asked me how did the election come out. And I told them, well, I won very slightly by 6 votes at the time. And they said, really? I said, and they would say, I thought it was a landslide. I saw no point in me getting out and voting. I didn't make it. And, you know, and the fact that we had early voting and for the week prior to that and mail-in voting for absentee ballots, I didn't really find that excuse. My neighbors even said that they assumed that I was going to win, that they didn't need, you know, they chose to do something else on a nice day like that Saturday. They chose to do something different. We only had 914 voters come out and vote. And that's counting all ballots, early voting and everything. And it just shows you that if there's nothing other than the norm on a town election, nothing special, for some reason, people don't get out and vote. And that's why I've always had on my campaign pushes that I put out there that every vote counts. And it does. I mean, I've been through this before. The very first time I ran, I won by 1 vote. And it was a fact that it was the old way of voting where you penciled in and somebody penciled in my name and then erase it and penciled in my opponent's name and the computers kicked it out because they didn't erase it good enough. But it was obvious they changed their mind. It was for this person. That doesn't happen with the way we're voting now. Now, when you put it down, the mark, it's with ink and you cannot erase it. And I have to say that our voting system in Whitman is outstanding. It was right to the voter. Everything was, when we did the recount, it was right to the numbers.
Yeah, and let me stop you right there. And that is I want to get your individual takes on what you had to go through to be able to decide that you wanted the recount, or, you know, wait and see if your opposition wanted the recount, and what you had to do. So we'll start with you, Dan. What did you have to go through? Was it different this time around doing the recount than it was your first time having to do one?
It was basically the same. The opponent who lost goes for the recount. Why would the person who won go for a recount? So anyways, my opponent, the first time and the second time, went to the town clerk and in writing asked for a recount. And she came with the legal ways of doing it as far as what the rules and regulations of a recount was. And Don Valley, our town clerk, did the same thing with Fred Nye, sent us registered letters, exactly the A, B's, and C's of our recount and what we needed to do, and we followed it to the letter. I dare say my opponent and Fred's opponent didn't. And I was quite surprised that they just willy-nilly showed up for the recount.
So you did not have to go out. Your opposition had to go out, and I believe, I'm wrong, gentlemen, they had to go to, they had to get 10, at minimum, 10 signatures from each precinct. And I think there's four precincts. And
yes.
The smart money would say, I'm going to go out and get 20 signatures just in case there's an issue with voter registration. At least you have enough to cover. Maybe 15 is enough, but at least have enough so it's plausible to be able to go forward with a recount.
That makes sense? That's what happened. And in Fred's case, the person that was called for the recount against him, two of the signatures in two of the precincts were denied, and there wasn't 10. And so out of the four precincts, there was only two that could be recounted.
Fred, what was that like? You know, going through the process and finding out that, yes, indeed, your opponent wanted to have the recount, but then after having to go through the process, what happened? Was it only half of the precincts were actually recounted?
Yeah, and I don't know exactly, you know, the reasoning. All I know is the letter that I received. But you're entitled to ask for a recount in one precinct. You don't have to have the whole election recounted. And that's the impetus behind 10 signatures. Evidently, for whatever happened, my opponent in two of the precincts, they didn't meet the proper standard. So there was only precinct, I think it was 3 and 4, that were recounted. You know, you want to make sure that you have your ducks in a row and your paperwork filed properly. And as far as that goes, that, you know, it's the same as when you turn in signatures for your nomination papers. You know, they give you two sheets to get 64 signatures. I turned in, I don't know, 75, 85, something like that. You only need 50. You know, you always get more than what you need just in case. You know, and evidently that wasn't done. I do know there was a Facebook posting, I was told, you know, hours before the deadline. You know, is there anybody around from this precinct or that precinct? We need more signatures. And it was 10 days after the election. I'm not here to critique, you know, somebody else's, you know, methods, etc. All I could do is worry about myself.
And folks, I'm just tuning in. We're joined by Fred Small. He is has been reelected to the Whitman-Hanson Regional School Committee, and Dan Savucci, Whitman Selectman, who also has been reelected to another term. So you get word that your opposition wants to do a recount. What do you have to do as an individual on your end? Do you have to show up with representation? Do you need to ask people to be there to kind of be a set of eyes? What happens? Dan, we'll start with you. What did you have to do to get ready for this?
Okay. Ben and I basically did the same thing. But anyways, we were asked that we were allowed to have agents there watching the recount, one watching the person who is looking at the ballot and voicing to another agent, another person who was marking on a piece of paper what that person said. And we're allowed to have one person watch each of them to make sure that it was done right. And there was three tables, so there's six people there. And then we were allowed to have one person at the table where the registrars were recording them and making sure that they were recording them right. As far as, like, in my race, I could not be one of the agents. I could fluctuate back and forth, looking, watching what they're doing, cannot say anything. Voice, not everything was silent. And the only ones that were able to be there are agents representing us. And, of course, Fred and I retained a lawyer to make sure things were done properly, and they were.
Fred, what was the process like? What was it like sitting there? How long did the process play out? Was it a long period? Myself, as someone who has had to report on voting, I've had to do recalls, recounts, I should say recounts, or do just regular voting. I mean, there is one community in Plymouth County that still does a hand vote. That's the great town of Plimpton. Was it a long process, Fred, or was it relatively quick?
I want to say the selectman's race with the four precincts was about an hour and 10, hour and 15 minutes. Yep. And my race was very similar, a little bit shorter, but there were four names that they were, you know, to call off, or two names per race. So it was half the precincts, but double the candidates, so to speak. The process was a learning experience for me. It was something I had never been through. I will say that, we have a coordinator, so to speak, with our, town committee. And Mr. Eaton was, Greg Eaton is a great guy, coordinated everything for us, or with us, I should say, as far as what to expect, what not to expect, what we needed to do, what we shouldn't do. Don Varley did a fantastic job as far as laying out the ground rules, knowing what our, we could expect, what we could do, couldn't do, etc. And then being there and watching it all unfold in front of us. Now the vote tally, it did change slightly, which was surprising.
Before we get into that, I want to kind of get what it was like for each of you. I mean, showing up there that day, what's going through your heads? Are you confident that things are going to stand and you might gain, or are you like, here we are. Here's for all the marbles, and I'm either continuing on with a lot of the things that we have in the works as our individual board or committee, or it's life as life goes on. Dan, what was going through your head for that hour and a half, that you had to watch this?
What I had to do is, when I was notified of the recount, all the boards and committees that I sit on, like Old Colony Planning Council and Joint Transportation, and one that the Board of Selectmen send me to, or that I go to and work for the town, I had to notify them that if in fact I lost the race, I would probably be off their committee. As far as the MPO, I'm a signatory. I need to be a elected official to sit on that board. And if I had to notify them that if in fact I lost, I was off that board. Joint Transportation, the same thing.
Yep.
And all the other boards, the MBTA and, Plymouth County, I told I would be off those boards, and that they didn't need to get another representative from our town. That being said, they were also worried that they didn't want to lose me to be on those boards, because I'm there all the time and I'm a valued participant in the boards, that after the recount, I got email after email saying, how did it come out? How did you do? Are you still on our board? And I was saying yes to them, which was glad. That's what I was really worried about, because I give so much time for the town, just to represent our town.
But Dan, what was going through your head during the recount? Was it strictly that you know, I have these duties, you know, I have these responsibilities that are built into being, you know, you proudly, you are proud of being a liaison to so many boards, right, as you've already kind of illustrated. You're a retired individual who could, you could be enjoying, you know, your retirement by being out on the golf course every day, but you take a lot of pride in serving on different committees, school committees, transportation committees, because that's what you love doing. You love serving the general public. And I know Fred is the same way, where Fred, you may be employed, but you take your job seriously and you take what you do for your community very seriously. So what I'm asking you, Dan, was what was going through your head during that hour, hour and a half, as you're sitting there going, oh my God, did you have confidence or were you just concerned like, this doesn't look good?
Well, it's funny, when I had the vote, the original vote in front of me on my iPhone, that, you know, the tally that was put out originally. So I knew the numbers in each precinct and the amount of votes for each precinct. And as they were counting them, and, you know, and I would hear my opponent's name, you know, time after time after time, I'm saying, oh my God, wait a minute, what's going on here, right? Yeah, yeah. But then my name would pop up. It was just the way it was. And my biggest thing is when all the votes were tallied, then I would go to the registrar who put it into the computer, right? I wanted to make sure that the numbers that she tallied up in the computer that she told us were exactly what I was seeing on my phone, if it wasn't, what the difference was, plus or minus one for me. I mean, at the time, I won by 6 votes. So if it was the same, it was the same vote, amount of votes, but for which candidate? And that's what I was waiting for. And as we were going table by table, looking at the tallies as they added them up, I'm adding them up on my iPhone to see if it matches what was printed as far as when we had election day and they came out. And there was times when I was getting nervous until the last amount of votes were tallied. And the worst part about it is the last one, which was precinct 4, she won handily. So I was really nervous to say if she gained votes in that one, there could be an issue. But I lucked up.
What about you, Fred? What's going through your head as someone, you've never been through a recount before, right?
Never been through a recount. So I reached out to quite a few people and asking, what does this mean? And, you know, statistics, you know, being with the insurance background, you look at statistics and you say, out of 900 voters, you say, geez, 6 votes. But then when you look and you say, okay, a 1% victory would be 9 votes. So statistically, you won by a little over a half a percent. Then you realize that the machines that we have are brand new machines. So those voting machines, that was the first elections that they had used them for. They had been calibrated and recalibrated. So the machines were up to snuff, so to speak. Then you understand what happened even after the first optical scan. They waited an hour because there were a couple of ballots that they needed to look at by hand that the machine had picked up something on. The machine was accurate enough to see minor variations. So I felt somewhat comfortable, but it's the will of the voters. And, you know, I learned a long time ago, what you can control, control. What you can't control, you can't control. I felt that I had run, you know, a campaign that tried to show all of my issues, all of the things that were important to me, and tried to convey that to the voters. You'll never satisfy everybody, but I was hoping that I satisfied enough people. And, you know, it was in the hand of, you know, what people intended to vote at that point in time. You know, so that was what was going through my mind as I was watching and seeing, you know, everything unfold in front of me.
We're at the 2/3 mark of our conversation here. And if folks are just tuning in, We're joined by Fred Small. He is a member of the Whitman-Hanson Regional School Committee, and Dan Salvucci, who is a Whitman selectman. So, Fred, did you pick up any votes? Did you lose any votes?
How did it all shake out? I picked up 3 votes out of 2 precincts. So when it was all said and done, my competitor that asked for the recount didn't pick up anything. I pulled ahead a little bit further. Okay. So there was that, magic 1% margin that we were just talking about.
How about you, Dan? How did you do? Did you pick up votes?
Yes, I picked up 1 vote in precinct 1. Apparently, I don't know if it was mail-in ballot or whatever, but somebody had written my name in instead of just circling the circle, wrote my name in and thought that that was enough. So since there was no certain, there's a circle beside the name of the person that is running, didn't circle it in, just wrote my name in and put it in. Of course, the machine kicked it, right? And then when that was challenged, it was brought to the registrars, the elected registrars. Mm-hmm. They looked at it. There's 3 of them. They looked at it and said, that's an obvious vote for me, Dan Salvucci. So it went from a blank to a vote for myself. So I picked up 1 vote.
And looking at it in retrospect, how do you feel at this date, again, a week later, how do you feel that the process played out, and how happy are you to be back being sworn in for another term?
Actually, I was sworn in the night of the election.
Sure, I know that.
That's whether or not I was, and since I won, I didn't have to be re-sworn. But I thought Dawn Varley did an outstanding job as that time. She controlled it. The registrars were there. They were very professional, and the people that were counting the votes and recording the votes at each table, very professional. Mm-hmm. Nobody spoke. You weren't allowed to, and if you had an issue, you raised your hand. And at that point, then the registrars would come over, ask what the issue was, and then both applicants were told what the issue was, and the registrars made the decision, and both applicants, myself and my person who challenged me, either agreed or disagreed on the decision of the registrars. And there's no reason to disagree with the registrars. They were right on the money. They were very professional.
Yeah, we have a few minutes left here. One more thing that we want to make sure we mention, but I want to give Fred an opportunity. Now that it's all said and done, give us your thoughts of being reelected and being back on that committee that you enjoy being a part of and being a very important part of the process.
And I never missed a beat. Right after the initial election, I do know that the committee reached out to the town, and the town's opinion was, and of course this is before a recount was requested, Fred won the election. He has been sworn in. He is your legally elected school committee representative, and just went forward with that, period, with all normal school committee business, etc. I was basically of the mindset I was going to be on the committee and keep going until someone told me I couldn't. If the votes had turned out the other way, and I wasn't on the committee, I would have congratulated my opponent and, stepped aside. But until that happened, I was going business as normal.
We should, we got just 2 minutes left here. It should take a moment to note that there's going to be some business that's going to have to be done in the town of Whitman, and I think with the school jointly, because you need to point, one member has had to resign. What are the details on picking a new school committee member for the Whitman-Hanson Regional School Committee? Dan, you want to take that, and then we'll go to Fred to close it out?
Okay. I feel that this Tuesday, we're going to have a joint meeting with the Whitman representatives of the school committee and the Board of Selectmen. Chairman, Kyle Walski, he will discuss the way we're going to do it. And I think the way we're looking at it is that we will put it out there that we're looking for an applicant who would like to be on the school committee. And then they would send a letter to both the Board of Selectmen and the school, the public school superintendent, the school committee members, right, of their request to be an applicant, to be considered, and sort of a resume of why they feel they could benefit the schools. And when we get those applicants, we will call for another meeting with both boards, and we'll have a chance to interview all the applicants that come forward. And the school committee and the Board of Selectmen will cast their votes for the person they think is best. And the one who gets the most votes, I assume, will be on a member of the school committee for the remainder of the year. And then next May, they will have to rerun.
Brett, anything you want to add to that?
On Tuesday night, and hopefully it'll be a brief meeting. My grandson has his first championship Little League game. Starts at 6:30, so way to go, you know, the little eight-year-olds on McWiggins Pub Little League team. Or as he said last night, well, it's not the championship, Grandpa. It's the World Series to us. I've got to put the plug in for him, and I'm so excited for him, and hopefully we'll be able to see, you know, some of the game at some point. I look at it, you know, losing Dan Cullity is a loss. Dan put in, you know, many years of time and effort into our committee, but I can understand, you know, family obligations and circumstances change. I know my phone's been ringing with a few different folks, you know, asking what's going on, and I may be interested. And I'm enthused that some of the people that may apply. I don't have a decision in it. You know, at this point, I'm only a person. It's going to be the will of the committee or the joint committees,
right?
You know, as to the direction of how it goes for the appointment and who actually gets appointed. But, you know, I'm enthused for that. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. We'll obviously, I believe, get letters of interest, resumes, and it'll be based upon qualifications. And I'm sure it's not going to be an easy decision. Yeah.
No, but gentlemen, we gotta leave it there. But I want to thank you each for joining me for this particular conversation.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you. And, you know, once again, I'd be remiss if I didn't thank Don Varley and everybody that participated in the recount, from the Board of Registrars to the workers. Everybody was just fantastic. Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Yes, well said, Fred. Well said.
We'll be back in just a moment. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
At CDW, we get that as an IT professional, your hands are full. Our experts can give you the help you need by custom configuring Apple products like the iPad and Mac, so they're ready to go right out of the box. Your employees get highly secure devices that feel familiar and operate intuitively, and you'll benefit from easy ongoing management that frees up your hands for other projects. IT orchestration by CDW. People who get it. Find out more at cdw.com/appleatwork.
Microban 24 protects against Staphylococcus aureus and Enterobacter aerogenes bacteria, but does not provide 24-hour protection against viruses. Every time you touch a surface, you leave behind bacteria. Use Microban 24 sanitizing spray to keep surfaces sanitized all day. Spray on hard surfaces to kill 99.9% of bacteria and viruses initially, including the virus that causes COVID-19. Microban 24 keeps killing bacteria for 24 hours, touch after touch. When used as directed, Microban 24, touch after touch, it doesn't give up.
Buying, selling, or trading in a car? Learn from the experts how to make the process work for you. Tune into the Boss Auto Show every Saturday after the news at noon on 95.9 WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we have arrived at the final segment of the radio program. I don't want to say that it's my favorite. Each, you know, it's almost like having kids. Each kid is my favorite, but there's a uniqueness that I appreciate. And joining me is a gentleman who has a uniqueness I definitely appreciate. I will say is that he serves so many roles on my radio program. Not only is he a great documentarian, award-winning documentarian, but he is the master of conversation and versatile. Versatility is the key. And just a couple of weeks ago, he messaged me because he's a sports guy also at heart. There was this news that Danny Ainge of the Boston Celtics was stepping down. And the one thing that Newby had been asking for, requesting, begging, promoting on social media are great changes to his Boston Celtics. Newby Rateau is my guest. Newby, I hope that was a good enough build-up to our conversation.
Listen, Kevin, at the end of the day, I keep telling everyone, we're just sports guys. At the end of the day, I keep telling them I'm just a sports guy. You know, that's my true love. That's how actually we met with through sports. You know, that's how I got on TV is through sports. So appreciate you having me on. And it's a new day for the Celtics. It's a glorious day.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, the very foundation, building, going off of what you just said is, you know, your very foundation stepping up big time with Newby Rateau, where I admired you. You took on all comers. You had a very unique set, and you did not mind being. You know, it's almost like that WWE. When you'd have a 2-on-1 match. You know, you didn't mind having two people coming at you with their opinions because you were ready to take on all comers.
You know, it's funny. I've always said we are first take before first take. People would say, "Oh, you can't just have two people, three people at a table yelling at each other, arguing about sports." It was to get criticized for that in high school, about having a sports show about just arguing for 30 minutes. Now that's the thing. First Take, Undisputed, all the shows on ESPN, the different podcasts. This is what it's all about. So, we definitely came out there, and pioneered some of that stuff.
Oddly enough, and if you're using like First Take or any of those shows, I mean, you were kind of the local version of Stephen A. Is that accurate? Would you say that's accurate?
I'd say so. I was asked. Stephen A. was my idol. Stephen A. and Stuart Scott.
Yeah. Who's the other side of the pillow? Who would ever forget that phrase? Love that phrase. But we're here to talk a little bit about the Celtics. How do you, right now, the NBA playoffs are ongoing. I don't know how much of it you are actually still following. Oddly enough, and I'm shedding no tears, LeBron James and his Lakers are no longer in the mix. And we see some new blood. We see some new blood, whether it's in the East. You got, Brooklyn in the house. You've got the 76ers. Heck, you got the Hawks from Atlanta. And then the Western Conference, you got the Jazz. You know, I remember the Jazz from back in the day with Carmelone, the postman, that was claim to fame. He never could get over that hump and get that championship.
Yeah, they call him the mailman. It was the mailman at the postman, the mailman.
Get mailman. Right. I'm sorry. I was having a Mike Simmons moment. Yeah. a friend of ours who does local television. Yes, the mailman, because he delivers. Exactly. But you know why I say that? Because another friend of ours always says that. So it's kind of stuck
right.
My temporal lobe. But you also have, I believe we have, is Denver still in the mix?
Denver's in it. They're probably going, they look like they're wobbling a little
Clippers.
Bit. He's looking good. Clippers.
It's an interesting mix, and it's a new mix. Is it going to generate revenue? Is it going to generate folks to want to watch it? I don't know. But we look at the Boston Celtics, who seems as though they never could get beyond the Eastern Conference Finals over the past few years. With this change in the front office, do you feel that there's a chance that the Celtics will be able to rebuild and be back in the title game in the next couple of years?
Absolutely. I think so. I think the Boston Celtics, one thing that they do is that, they're a consistent organization. And Brad Stevens moved over to the front office, though was not my first pick. I could understand their wanting to be consistency. Because they drafted overall pretty good for the most part when they had a top lottery pick. For the most part. I mean, they kind of muffed on some of the picks, after 15, like getting Kelly Olynyk, over Giannis Antetokounmpo and some, things like that. But I think overall, their lottery picks, they nailed it. They nailed it. Here's the issue with the Celtics is that, and everyone goes through it, if you guys go to church, A lot of times you go to church every Sunday and the pastor says something every Sunday, but once in a while he'll get a guest speaker because his message goes stale. I'll do that when I'm teaching. I'll teach a subject, but I'll bring in a reporter that they see on TV because the message goes stale. And Brad Stevens is a good X&O coach. But here's the issue with Brad Stevens. I knew this was the issue. Brad Stevens was great with coaching mediocre talent, okay? But Brad Stevens never played in the league, okay? And when you're coaching superstars, okay, he's never coached a superstar for, you know, before Tatum. You got Tatum and Brown. Tatum, a superstar. Brown, I'd say, high-level all-star. It is very hard for Tatum. He probably respects him as a person, but it's hard for Tatum to respect Brad Stevens and say, you know, Brad, you never stepped foot in this league. I'm going to be possibly a Hall of Famer. I'm an all-star now, signing a max deal. What the hell do you know right now that you could tell me about being a better basketball player? And he's reached that point where the players, okay, are realizing, Brad, you haven't played in the league. You're saying really good stuff, but it's hard for me to really digest it if you haven't played in the league. And I think we're at a point in time, if we don't have the next coach, we cannot recycle coaches. We cannot get Stan Van Gundy, Jeff Van Gundy, Mike D'Antoni. I don't want any recycled coaches. Unless you're a Phil Jackson or Pat Riley or Greg Popovich with low cachet, you're not going to get the respect of these players. You got to get someone relatively young, but old enough to get the respect somewhere in the, you know, maybe low 50s age range, 40s age range, where they truly respect, okay? And if they don't get that, they're going to be what I like to call a TNT team. A TNT team is the team you watch on Thursday, national TV. It's fun. It's cute. Oh, my God, I have nothing to do. Let's watch the Celtics. But to become an ABC team to play in June, okay, you need to get a coach with a little cachet. You need to get a Mark Jackson, a Chauncey Billups. And to be quite frank with you, it needs to be a minority coach. And I will say the Celtics lead, I would say, one of the leaders of doing that. You know, they've always had put minority coaches in great positions. You know, start with Bill Russell, Casey Jones.
Yep.
You know, we had ML Carr, Doc Rivers. I mean, they've had that. They've had having a problem with that. But I think that's important for these young players to be able to relate to someone in the league, to go to that next level. Listen, it's a great coaching job. You got two all-stars. Not exactly if you're rebuilding here. You have two all-stars who are 23 and 24. So that's a great job. They are one piece away from really being a Bradley Beal. Now, that one piece is going to be a lot of work, a Bradley Beal, Damian Lillard. They're one piece away from being, you know, in the conversation for a championship contender. They're not that far off. I mean, hell, they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals last year, and they should have beat Miami. So they're not that far off.
Well, the biggest problem that they had last year against Miami is they didn't have a rim protector, didn't have somebody who could pull down those rebounds, and I felt as though they lacked that sniper, you know, that deadly person who can 15, 20 foot, the three-point stripe, could just, you know, hit darts constantly without, you know, clang, 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 you know, because that's what we saw, is we saw a lot of missed shots. We saw a lot of Marcus Smart, you know, taking those last-second shots. I'm sorry, but I love Marcus Smart as a leader. I do not see him as the guy that I want taking the last shot.
Yeah, go ahead, Kevin.
No, I was going to say, I would, you know, you mentioned, you know, Jaylen Brown. You mentioned Tatum. And these are the two that I would rather see take that last shot because they have such a higher percentage of makes than breaks.
I think the advantage the Celtics have, Kemba Walker, I believe, has after this year an option to leave. So he has 2 years left. So it's going to be difficult to move that contract. But if I'm a team that, you know, wants to, you know, have a max slot and is unable to sign a max player, they could trade for Kemba Walker so they can have that slot available. You know, so teams who necessarily can't sign big time free agents might be interested in taking on that contract to later on trade it to kind of level it out. So listen, Boston, Milwaukee, Utah, Oklahoma City are the four teams that free agents are just not going to. I mean, that's just fact. You know, I mean, you had Al Horford. Kemba Walker is probably the highest profile name. You're not going to get Kevin Durant. You're not going to get Jan. They're not signing with Boston. Okay. First of all, it's cold cities. It's not that fun. You know, it's great cities. It's just not that fun. Listen, let's keep it 100 here. And I'm going to be honest with you. You know, a young black man in Boston, listen, there's not much to do. I went out yesterday. I went to the same club I went to the week before that and the week before that. There's just not many clubs or places to go. Nothing about the Celtics. The city itself is not a fun place for a new African-American black person to come to the city. I'm fine with it because my city, I love it. But I can understand why LeBron or KD doesn't want to go. They want to go to Philly, New York, Miami, Los Angeles. It's just a more fun city for a young person. I mean, that's fact. That's just fact. So that's going to be an issue in terms of drawing free agents. So how do we have to do it? Drafting, which I think Danny Ainge nailed those two picks, nailed it. Okay, Tatum and Brown, he nailed it. Okay, and trading players. And, you know, I think I'm hearing rumors that Al Horford wants to come back. You know, veteran player. You know, you'll get players who signed to Boston who just want to win. Not necessarily, you won't get the young athletes in their prime who signed with Boston, but you get players who want to win. And look, we've had three free agents who left. That's a problem. Kemba, Gordon Hayward, Kyrie Irving. Okay, they left. Now, Gordon Hayward was one of the first ones to sign, I think a big name to sign with Boston in terms of a free agent. Kemba Walker, I mean, you can say so, but I think Gordon Hayward was a little more high profile.
But
They all left.
But hold on. When you talk Gordon Hayward, though, this was somebody who was lured by Brad Stevens, but, you know, could not take the heat of the city in regards to, I mean, look at how he started. He literally started off on the wrong foot. you know, within, you know, the first 6 minutes wearing a Celtics jersey in regular season, he goes out injured, loses the year, and we never got to realize, you know, the true potential of Gordon Hayward.
Listen, the Danny Ainge put a championship team together. Mm. We had four All-Stars. We had four All-Stars. Al Horford, yep. Hayward, Kemba, Al Horford, Hayward, Kyrie Irving, Jason Tatum, Jalen Brown. Actually, you could argue maybe possibly five All-Stars.
Mm.
Okay? You know, and then off the bench, Terry Rozier, Marcus Morris, Marcus Smart. I mean, that was a championship team. They blew it when they got eliminated from the Milwaukee Bucks 2 years ago. That was their championship year. They blew it. So Danny Ainge, I thought, did his job. That's why I think Brad Stevens needed to lose his job. Danny Ainge brought a championship team. Let me say this again. Al Horford, All-Star. Gordon Hayward, All-Star. Kyrie Irving, All-Star. Tatum and Brown off the bench. Terry Rozier, which is going to be an All-Star next year. Marcus Smart, Marcus Morris. Danny did his job.
Yeah.
Danny deserves some criticism. He did his job. Brad Stevens did not do his job, and that's why he deserves to lose his job as coach. He didn't do his job. He choked. He choked.
Again, we're talking with the great Nubi Ritel. Nubi has joined me for many different conversations, some fun, some difficult, some in his wheelhouse in regards to some of the things that he is working on. We should probably, at the end of our segment, tease where things stand with his latest documentary, I Am You. We'll do that. We'll get a kind of an idea as to how things are progressing with his newest body of work. We'll do that later. But we're talking about the Boston Celtics. We're talking about the overall hallelujah that Nubi had put on social media, because for the longest time, that's what made me say this will be a good. I contacted him once I heard the news that Danny was stepping and that Brad was being elevated to the front office. He's like, we got to get on this. We got to have a conversation, Kevin. That this is good therapy for me to kind of talk a little bit about this. I have to say is that the people have been critical about the idea of that Danny leaves and for some reason Brad Stevens is elevated to the. Was there not a better choice or was that the plan? That, you know, instead of us having to pay Brad Stevens, you know, what he's got, because he just resigned a new, contract, instead of saying, okay, well, this guy can kind of just sit on the sidelines for the next couple of years and collect what's in his contract. Let's put him to use and make him the president of basketball operations. Was there not a better suitor out there that we could have had in the front office that would be able to find that good talent and build a championship squad?
Yeah, I think so. They could have found someone better. But again, what separates the Celtics, the Steelers, the Patriots, San Antonio, Spurs, is that they want consistency.
Yeah.
So I just think that's important for them. Listen, I think Brad is a genius in terms of basketball, in terms of X's and O's. I just think he can't get to his players. So I think, number one, I think they did it because, again, they didn't want to pay him. He just had a contract. So they wanted to, you know, use him in the most resourceful way. Could they have found someone better? Yes, but I do think he can succeed in that, because a coach nowadays, I think, has a pretty good idea of how, you know, their draft. He's in the room with Danny Ainge drafting these players. You know, I'm pretty sure he's having conversations about what players are needing trades. So, I mean, I don't think it's a deer in the headlights position. I think he has an idea. Could they have found someone better? Yes. But I understand the mindset behind it. A, we want continuity. And B, we want, you know, someone, you know, who knows the team inside and out. And that's Brad Stevens. Can he be cutthroat? Can he be cutthroat and trade players? Because he said he likes his team. I don't like his team. A lot of people don't like his team. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't like Semi Ojeleye. Nice guy and everything, but, you know, just because you like him, you're not going to trade him? Does he have that cutthroat mentality? I don't know. We'll find out. I think he does, because he seems like he's someone who doesn't react too much on emotion. And I think that was a problem maybe with him coaching. But that mentality may work well in the front office. Like I said before, I'm a Danny guy. Danny did his job and built two championship teams. The Garnett era, okay, they had one season where they're terrible. They, you know, and they got the lottery pick and got Marcus Smart. But they didn't miss the playoffs since then. Danny did his job. He built a second championship team. We should have at least three championships right now. Because we should have won back-to-back if Kevin Garnett didn't get injured. And we should have won that year when we had five All-Stars on the bench and we lost to Giannis Antetokounmpo, who barely can hit a free throw right now.
Mm.
Okay?
So, I would ask you, who would be your front runners for coach? Coaches who have played in the, you know, individuals who have played in the league, who understand the league, who understand the millionaire mentality of these players, but can get through to them and saying, hey, I've been out there on that court. I understand X's and O's. I can take you to, you know, that championship series and ultimately help us win another banner.
Cool. Well, I think it's Chauncey Billups. I think Sean, let me tell you a few reasons. Number one, he played for Boston. Okay. Not that long.
Drafted number three.
You know, they wanted Tim Duncan, but he was there. I think, you know, he moved around a little bit to Orlando, Minnesota, and to Denver, but really found his niche in Detroit. Championship player. I think he's young enough. I think he's 44. So the players, you know, remember him playing. He's not ancient, okay? Has NBA coaching experience, coaching right now with the Los Angeles Clippers. He was actually rumored to try to be the general manager for a few different teams. So they respect his front office skills and his coaching ability. Okay, he's under Tyronn Lue, which I think is a fantastic coach. That's my number one, Chauncey Billups. Number two, Sam Cassell. He's a little older, though, 51 years old. You know, I'm not sure if they remember his Houston Rockets days, but he did win a championship with the Boston Celtics in 2008. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if players remember that. I think it's got to be a younger coach. I'm hearing rumors, Mass Live reported, Penny Hardaway. Not a big fan of that pick. Penny's never stepped foot. He stepped foot and dominant, but in terms of coaching, he doesn't have NBA coaching experience. So I'm not a big fan of that. And then they're saying Tara Lawson. That's a pick, but I just think Tara Lawson, you know, no matter what sex she is, you know, I don't think she has NBA coaching experience. She didn't even coach with Duke because they canceled the season. So in terms of experience, I want Chauncey Billups. To talk about Jason Kidd, no. I don't want Jason Kidd. Okay, he's a walking disaster. He recycled coach again. And look at his track record. Brooklyn and Milwaukee, terrible. All right? let's get a new coach. Let's give him a chance. I think Chauncey Billups is the person and respected in the league, is a winner. I think in is a minority. I think that's important, in, you know, for the younger players to have a coach that looks like them. I think it's gonna be I think it should be Chauncey Billups.
So you're poo-pooing Jason Kidd, because I know that there was a push out there. There was talk about Jason Kidd possibly going to Portland because Damian Lillard liked him, but that the front office is saying no, no, no. If it was to be able to grab or make a play for Lillard, who I think is a fantastic player and who I think would be great to team up, you're going to have to give up. You have Jaylen Brown, of course. You're going to have to give up some pieces. But if you can have a nice 1-2 punch like, you know, Tatum and Lillard, wouldn't you want to do that? I mean, you say you don't like the idea of Jason Kidd?
Listen, if Kidd can lure Lillard, maybe. But Lillard and Tatum are not going to win a championship. You need another piece. Now, if Tatum and Lillard can lure a third piece like Bradley Beal,
right,
I'm not sure how they can do it in terms of, you know, having the amount of money to do it. I think Bradley Beal's a max player. So that's three max players on one team. I don't know. But, you know, that's your job, Brad Stevens, to figure that out. That's not my job. That's your job. If that's the case, yes, bring back Kidd. Yes, bring Kidd. If you can lure, but Tatum and Beal are not going to work. Tatum and Lillard are not going to work. It has to be three. You need three players.
How about a guy like Perk? How about Kendrick Perkins?
No.
No, why?
Absolutely not. Kendrick Perkins, number one, was not a good enough player to have the cachet with these players. I mean, Kendrick Perkins just wasn't. It was Kendrick Perkins a couple of years, but Kendrick Perkins, his last couple of years, really was pretty bad. I love Kendrick Perkins.
But I have to say, though, is that, you know, when Danny Ainge traded him away, the team kind of fell apart that championship year. That year.
I think Perk lacks the temperament. I could see Perk getting technical foul every two games.
Really?
Yeah, I think he lacks that. Yeah, I think he lacks temperament. I don't think, you know, lacks temperament. You know, maybe assistant coach and then work his way up. Lacks temperament. I don't think he's a good enough player to get the respect of Tatum and Brown.
And we're joined by Newbie Rateau. He is an award-winning documentarian. Also, a great conversationalist. We've had a bunch of different conversations over the years, not just about making films, but he understands what's going on with today's culture. And as he admitted, you know, it all starts with sports. And then, you know, it's kind of an infinite love when it comes to Boston sports, especially. We just have a couple of minutes left here. Probably one of the closing questions. So if you have to make moves to improve this team, what could be a prime move? I think if you can move Kemba Walker and get back a player, maybe I've actually heard rumored Kristaps Porzingis is not happy in Dallas. Is that a chip that the Celtics go after, or is there other, or are there other pieces that you'd rather see Kemba traded for, if that's a move to make?
Yeah, I think Kemba, we should trade Kemba. I'm not sure who's going to get him. Maybe we can get a pack of Skittles or like a TGIF gift card or something like that. I mean, like he has one leg. He played one leg. But, you know, but then, that's your job. But we got to trade that contract.
Yeah.
Kristaps Porzingis, kind of who we thought he was. I'm not sure how much of a winner he is. Because if he was a winner, he'd play better in Dallas. He's playing with Luka Doncic, who's probably the best player in the league right now, MVP candidate for the next couple of years coming. I want someone with some balls, okay? A little intestinal fortitude. I think Little would be great, you know, and I think Little's mentality is kind of like Garnett, kind of matches Boston. And again, I think Little actually would love Boston because players who just want to win, I think enjoy Boston. He's past his prime his 20s where he just wants to have fun and make money. He's been there, done that. So, all right, cool. Let's go to Boston and win. You know, I'm not looking to go out and have a good time. I'm looking to win.
Right.
So I think Little would be great. For the Celtics, just that mentality. I really wish, and I'm really ticked off about this, watching the playoffs right now, we should have got Chris Paul. That player would have changed the Celtics.
DP3.
I mean, I think we had opportunities to get him multiple years. We actually had an opportunity to get him years ago, trading Rajon Rondo and Ray Allen for Chris Paul, but we didn't pull the trigger.
Right.
But having said that, I think he would have been great. You know, we need someone with a little kill mentality, a little edge to them, a little edge, okay, because we have too many nice guys right here. We don't have line cutters. I can imagine Jason Tatum in the lunch line being very hungry, not cutting the line, okay? And when I'm hungry and there's German chicken and some pizza, I'm cutting the line. We need some line cutters.
All right, so we just got like a minute left. Where do things stand for IMU, at least production-wise?
Production-wise, we are flying right now. This next couple months, we're literally and figuratively flying. We're going to California, we're going to the Mexico border, we're going to New York tomorrow to shoot. So we're about 10%, 10-15% into the documentary. By the end of the summer, we'll be close to 70%. So the documentary is on pace to be done by the end of this year. We're going to Dominican Republic to do some filming out there. So we're flying. The next couple of months, it's going to be Newbie the Jet.
Well, we want to thank you for joining us this evening and talking a little bit about the Boston Celtics, helping us to put a nice bow on the radio program. He is Newbie Rateau, our guest, and that basically is all the program that we have. Thank you again, my friend.
Thank you, Kevin.
Got it. Until next week at 6:15 p.m. Have yourself a great night. You've been listening to Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.